Well, good sir. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Kevin. How about yourself?
Well, we have any number of topics, honestly, that we could get to. So that always makes for a good show. Like, when most weeks it's just like, ah, sure, fuck it, we'll start with SmackDown. And we could do that, because it was that was kind of funny when last night everyone's like, wow, SmackDown got robbed. And then SmackDown airs and you're like, wow, how'd Raw lose that much people?
That's an interesting question. It feels like Raw lost more people. But SmackDown lost a couple of big, big people. But I don't think Raw losing. I guess we kind of planned on talking about something else first. But you know, screw it. Let's change on the fly.
Sure.
Yeah.
We can go either way with that intro.
What? Oh, sorry. Say that again.
We can go either way with that intro, so it works.
Yeah. Well. No, you know, it feels like Raw may have lost more people, but I think SmackDown, especially with the loss of The Miz and Dean Ambrose, it really feels like they lost two of the pillars of this show since the brand split.
Oh, yeah.
I guess you could throw Bray Wyatt in there, but I really don't.
Oh man. Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, it just seemed like the people that went to Raw almost seemed like reruns, but like everyone that got moved to SmackDown is like, oh, needed a fresh start, needed fresh opponents. Like, they're just, other than Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn still being on the same brand.
Yeah.
You know, and really with the main event, they showed that they're at least not going to that feud anytime soon.
Right, no.
Thankfully.
Yeah, they showed that they're going with, AJ Styles going for the United States Championship. I have no idea what that means for Randy Orton after the House of Horrors match at Payback now. Because that's where it feels like they lost something. Who are the main eventers? You can fill up a 2-hour, you know, SmackDown TV show with the talent they have pretty well. What about these damn house shows? What about these SmackDown exclusive pay-per-views? That's where I think they're going to start to be feeling a loss here.
I think the interesting thing is that, and I'm just thinking about it now, is that SmackDown lost their two of their top heels, if not their two top heels.
Yes, they did. That is very true.
And because I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, this is a real problem. Cause I'm like, oh, they have Nakamura, and they turn Styles is definitely looking more like a babyface, and he's just he got straight up cheered this week,
and he encouraged it. Yeah, that there's just they're not gonna try and you know, if anything, maybe they'll have him be something of a tweener, but they're not gonna fight the tide on this one, at least of him getting cheered, which means that I guess. Technically, right now, Kevin Owens is the top heel, with Baron Corbin as number two.
Yeah, and that was the other weird thing to me, I liked that opening segment of SmackDown, because Baron Corbin's reasoning, you know, at least somewhat held up.
Yeah, I did like him there, but...
But,
ooh, man, did he drag that? He drag that triple threat match down. I didn't like that main event at all. So once again, he still needs work. You know.
Yeah.
He's not a.
He's not he's a not, finished
still
product.
Not a complete package yet.
Yeah.
That was probably the worst AJ Styles match I've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, it was more enjoyable when Baron Corbin wasn't in there.
Right, yeah.
I will put it that way, because there were a few spots that I was kind of digging with just Zayn and Styles in there. yeah, I guess Kevin Owens does replace one of those heels, but this was the getting back to the intro of the show. Like, this is the part that killed me, is that he loses clean to Dean Ambrose. Owens loses clean to Dean Ambrose to main event Raw, and then is supposed to come over and be a big deal, and it's just like, well, that's not how this works. Like, he needs to win, or like for all the times that they've done a double count out or had some type of a schmoz or something, like, why they didn't do that last night is...
No. You got a job on your way out of the old promotion. It's the time-honored tradition in the business. I'm not kidding. That's very likely the reasoning.
Oh, man. Hey, yeah, I mean, that's kind of nice, but the problem is that you can't have this occur on SmackDown at all.
Well, they did have a number of people who went over lose last week on SmackDown, but the difference is people had six days to forget about it. Whereas then you bring out Kevin Owens, Charlotte, announce the New Day 24 hours after they just basically got destroyed.
Yeah. I mean, they are definitely not getting any payback on the Revival anytime soon.
No, they're not. And which is fine. Which is, you know, the Revival needs to be built up. I mean, and the New Day is the New Day. It sounds like they're going to maybe put the New Day on ice for a little while. And then maybe bring them on SmackDown when Kofi's 100% by doing a video and not actually having them there, and just saying coming soon, not even next week.
Yeah, and that was, I guess, maybe one of the other problems is that SmackDown ends up picking up Rusev, but he's another coming soon guy.
Yeah, he's another injured guy, and it looks like, in the meantime, they're going to use Lana as a wrestler in the women's division. Certainly see how that goes. I was definitely very happy to see her. I won't lie. Once again, for the 2-hour television show, they can get by on what they have. It's the pay-per-view nights and these house shows that could suffer without John Cena.
Yeah, because I guess it'll still be interesting to see, like, and this is also kind of what made me think about SmackDown losing too many heels, is Nakamura was way, way over with that crowd, but it'll be interesting to see if he can continue to do that without really talking much.
I mean, you give him his few lines. But I'm very disappointed, because I really was looking forward to The Miz being his first opponent. I thought The Miz would be a great first opponent, you know, get the heel heat, do most of the talking, really, you know, get the whatever percentage of the crowd it is that and the audience at home who doesn't know who this man is, because they don't watch NXT and they don't follow, and they never follow New Japan.
Right.
To Miz is a guy who could absolutely talk people into, you know, loving this man but via hating him so much. Dolph Ziggler, not so much. But, you know, it's a fine, I guess Ziggler's a fine first opponent for Nakamura to run through.
Yeah. He'll serve his purpose. Like you said, like he Since there were a couple of people when I was online there that just didn't think that it was an appropriate match to start when it, and you know, it's another one of those ones where, you know, at most half of SmackDown and or Raw viewership watches, you know, the network, so people just aren't that familiar with them. And like you said, The Miz would have been a better choice, but Ziggler works. Like, that's what he's there Ziggler for works. Now.
And I could see that when, especially when Cena's not around, and even maybe even when he's around, because he's still, you know, he's gonna be a part timer from here on out. Nakamura is the key to SmackDown right now. You know, Randy Orton's Randy Orton. You know, he's been around for 15 years. You know what you get with him. It's solid. It's good. Unless he's wrestling Bray Wyatt because they have horrible chemistry. But, you know, most of the time, you get a good, solid match with Randy Orton.
Right.
But Nakamura needs to be the transcendent star of SmackDown. You know, it's all dependent on, you know, the crowds getting into him. And tonight they were in Boston. You know, that hardcore Northeast crowd. What, I always say things like this: what happens when they're in Des Moines? What happens when they're in Tulsa? You know, does Middle America fall in love with this guy just as much? And does Vince McMahon get what he has in Nakamura? Do you explain to a 71-year-old? How do you explain to a 71-year-old man how big, you know, Japanese pop culture has gotten in America, and that, you know, pushing this, you know, anime character brought to life is best for business? Gotta explain what my anime is, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny, and I guess I could tie this into something else that I was thinking about, that's somewhat related, that, you know, in some ways we've already forgotten that there have been a lot of guys pushed in the WWE that haven't traditionally been pushed. And I guess I thought about it when they announced AJ Styles weighing in at 218 pounds. And I mean, you really just don't get bigger than that. Like, I'm really glad that they didn't take him off of SmackDown.
And yeah, I'm very, very glad that would have been the end. They at least knew better than that.
Yeah, so there was that smart bit of planning on their part. But you know, his weight made me think. Like, I remember Jeremy said a couple of times worrying about the Revival not being big guys, and it's really not a concern these days. Like, there are so many guys that are smaller and that, you know, traditionally probably wouldn't have been pushed. But it's changed now. Now, I mean, I think Nakamura is a completely different case in and of himself, really, just because of the Japanese part of the equation.
Yeah, I mean, there's never been a... In WWE, certainly, there has never been a heavily pushed Japanese babyface. Never.
Oh.
And, you know, it's definitely something different. I mean, Triple H was able to run with him in NXT without, you know, any kind of interference or any questioning on the decision. And now he's on SmackDown. It's like, he's, you know... Putting him in there with someone like Ziggler and not giving him too much too soon is probably a good idea. You know, let them see what they have here.
Yeah, it's a good start. And I mean, the one thing that though Ziggler can't carry the mic work end of things, he will be able to do the in-ring things better than The Miz, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they'll have a good match. You know, I mean, at this point in his career, Ziggler knows his role. He's gonna bump like a madman for Nakamura's offense. He's not gonna, you know, do anything, you know, cute to try and cut him off or do anything like that. At this point, you know, Ziggler's just cashing a paycheck.
Yeah.
That's pretty obvious, you know, so he, yeah, putting over Nakamura like $1 million is his assignment. That's what he'll do. That's what he should do. That's what he will do. Yeah, yeah. Nakamura has the potential to be something really special. And yeah, and he, you know, the company just needs to, you know, let him grow. You know, let him grow. Let the crowds, you know, flock to him. He's got an incredible amount of charisma. You can't teach that. I mean, you got like, yeah, he's got something you can't teach. He just has it. You know, his energy, it's off the charts. I mean, I don't think you have to be, you have to be completely, you know, you have to completely block yourself from, you know, seeing what's right in front of you. Just have complete tunnel vision not to see what this guy possesses. You cannot take your eyes off this guy when he's doing his entire, from the moment he gets in the ring, from the moment he's
the entrance ramp. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because I think I said that a couple of weeks ago when we were doing the preview for NXT, and talking about him taking on Bobby Roode. Like, as much as I like Bobby Roode, and the Glorious thing is hilarious, and it really fits his kind of wheelhouse, Nakamura is just one of those guys that, you know, like you said, like, almost instantly I saw him, like, holy shit, this guy's good. He's different. Like, he really drew me in, like, not like the first time that I saw him. So, and there aren't that many people that happens with. So yeah, Nakamura does have a clear path for himself. It'll be interesting to see how or where they go with it. Because, I mean, like you said, like, because I'm not sure who else there is in between Dolph Ziggler and, as we already mentioned, Kevin Owens and Baron Corbin.
Yeah, and once again, right now, AJ Styles is definitely in some kind of a tweener status. It's not like they don't realize the quality of a match that Nakamura and AJ Styles can have. They're going to go there eventually. I think Nakamura and Randy Orton would be interesting. I know they just did the whole fake out to Randy Orton, you know, going back babyface, but maybe Orton going heel is the best play long term.
Oh,
it probably is, actually.
And I didn't even think about that, but I mean, that does kind of create an opening with Bray Wyatt and The Miz gone. That does kind of create an opening for Orton to do that.
And because it's not like his babyface character has ever been a nice person.
Yeah.
Burned a man's house down.
Yes, in the very, very recent past, he has done some very despicable things. it would not be a stretch to move him over that way. And I mean, he does always have the Viper gimmick, which makes things an easy transition too. So yeah, I that could be a way that SmackDown would benefit all around from the shakeup. And that doesn't even begin to start about the women's division on SmackDown, like. And I'm not sure that the Bobby Roode Nakamura comparison kind of exists for Alexa Bliss and Charlotte, but Charlotte desperately needed new opponents, and Bliss didn't really, like, I'm not sure I wanted to see her and Becky Lynch again, or to see Mickey James. Well, did she ever finish a feud with Mickey James, really?
Yes, yeah. They had a 2 out of 3 falls match.
Oh, that's right.
So yeah, they finished. Yeah, so yeah, that's been finished. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Technically, I don't know if Tamina was a switchover.
No, that's okay. Yeah, well, that was
because
one.
I don't think she. I don't think she's been gone for so long. I don't think that she was ever actually drafted in the first place. I'd have to look and see, but.
Yeah. That was kind of interesting to me, like, because I was like, holy sh! Because I almost typed something onto Twitter, and I'm like, you know what? They seem to be holding this segment up. I'm just gonna stop from tweeting to not sound like a dumbass. Because Shane does a good job of misdirection in announcing Tamina, which, I mean, it would really work well to have someone that's at least in the size neighborhood of Nia Jax for the future. And I never had a problem with Tamina to start with. Like, it
was... I've never been a fan. I don't think she brings much to the table. I've just never been impressed. She doesn't do anything for me. That's why I feel like even with Charlotte in the picture, I don't know if SmackDown got the better end of the bargain here. But once again, SmackDown on paper didn't look like they got the best end of the bargain last summer. And once again, the ability to it's working with what you have, and they might be able to do that. I wouldn't surprise me if they go with Charlotte and Naomi right away. Like, right away, of course, is a pay-per-view that's in, you know, over 5 weeks away, 5-6 weeks away still, but.
Right.
But yeah, just go right there. I mean, Charlotte and Becky Lynch haven't wrestled in a long time. Charlotte has never, Natalia and Carmella are technically heels, so maybe she wouldn't necessarily face off except in multi-woman matches, but, you know, between Naomi and Becky Lynch, and then, you know, whenever Nikki Bella returns, yeah, I mean, Charlotte's got opponents she either hasn't worked with before or hasn't worked with in a while, so. But she's been working with the same two people for the last 8 months or so.
Yeah. I mean, even if they didn't technically win, Leia said, like, to me, Charlotte desperately needed new opponents far more than Bliss did. I mean, she'd kind of worn out her welcome with Becky Lynch, I guess. But she hadn't... Well, she did... She lost
well, she did, it. Well, she did lose twice to Naomi. She lost the title. She got a rematch. She lost that too. So again, it's. I mean, it.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, it's probably
it
might be more of a lateral
second.
Move for her, but once again, it's still new opponents and new. You know, I have no doubt that she'll thrive on Raw.
Yeah, I'm not too concerned about that. I guess maybe that's more of one that, to me, is just good for both sides involved. Now that we run through more of Bliss's opponents, you know, because it's just basically an Alexa for Charlotte swap. So. That works out quite well. And I'm trying to think of, because were there any other changes, with the ladies? Because Lana's going to be, well, looks like she might be wrestling.
Yeah, I would say, yeah. I'd say that, you know, they're advertising her as coming in by herself, you know, before Rusev comes back, it seems. So, I definitely think that, you know, they're going to, you know, I mean, she's been training to wrestle for years and years now. You know, they've been vague. You know, there's been vague, you know, comments and, you know,
oh,
but in the newsletters and near IWC that, you know, that they're, she's got some physical issues that have kept her from training heavily. But, you know, she's gone back to the performance center and she's been working really hard. So I take it that she's gonna wrestle. There's unless she's just gonna dance in a chair every week, which I'm okay with. But maybe at some point she should wrestle. And then, what else is there? Over on Raw, Mickey James will be, once again, what she was on SmackDown. It's kind of like a steady veteran hand, bunch of new opponents for her to wrestle.
Oh, there. And I guess that's the other thing. You were kind of talking about Naomi and Charlotte wrestling. In a lot of ways, it almost seems like you have to burn through opponents somewhat quickly in this day and age. Just, I feel like we say it too often for it not to just kind of be a standard thing at this point.
Yeah, either burn through opponents or, stretch out views to two or three matches. Sometimes it's, in the case of Charlotte and Sasha, you do maybe one or two matches more than is really necessary, and you really start to lose people. But that's, when you try to do the two pay-per-view a month thing, that's definitely going to happen. Although thankfully they've decided to, in the post WrestleMania season, do a Raw pay-per-view 4 weeks after WrestleMania, and then a SmackDown pay-per-view 3 weeks after that, and then give about 3 weeks for the next pay-per-view. Then they do start, I think, in June and July. June and July will both be two pay-per-view months.
Yeah. So I guess I just think that that's going to be something that's going to happen at this point. It does help to get everyone a couple of fresh faces. And I guess I felt like they did that a little bit better on the women's end of things for both brands. Because I'm not sure, honestly, at this point that it matters if you're on the SmackDown or Raw brand, because the split's still recent enough to me that I kind of hearkening back to the AJ Styles thing, it'd be good if they established a couple of guys on each brand as that brand's guy, and they didn't get moved for several years. So, they can make a bigger deal out of it when they do eventually move.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as Raw picks, let's start with the Raw women. It looks like that they've got a very, very good, run of women for Bayley to face. Obviously, they made sure Nia Jax was put over huge all night.
Yes.
Alexa Bliss got herself into there. Sasha, there was a rumor that of them moving Sasha Banks over to SmackDown. Thankfully, that did not happen. Because we've been slowly, subtly building up a story with Sasha and Bayley for 6 months now. That would have gone down the drain if they continued to move over.
Yeah, that has been something that's moved at a snail's pace as far as things go. Because honestly, on Raw, I expected Banks to attack Bayley.
I thought the turn was coming right there.
Yeah.
And then you have Alexa Bliss coming out there and basically speaking as the voice of the viewer, okay, we are just so tired of this. We all know what's going on. We all know everyone but Bayley knows what's going on here. Come on. But no, you can go with Bayley and Nia Jax, you go with Bayley and Alexa, go with Bayley and Sasha, do the big turn. Yeah. So the Raw Women's title picture it's got some legs. They get through from here to, SummerSlam, without a doubt. And maybe even beyond.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think of, it was kind of strange that the IC champion, or the IC and the US championships switch brands, but technically not their current wearers of said championship.
Yeah, that makes absolutely no sense. I mean, it makes no sense in a storyline standpoint, but it does make sense in the standpoint of you want to have some parity to whether or not, you know, Chris Jericho can beat Kevin Owens at Payback. Whereas without it, without Daniel Bryan saying that tonight on SmackDown about, you know, the winner of the match at Payback comes over to SmackDown as the Intercontinental, as the United States champion, excuse me.
Yeah.
Because I'm wrong. You at least give people the hope that Jericho can win. When the reality is, it's probably his last pay-per-view, and he's probably lost.
Yeah,
But the majority of the office may not. But the majority of the audience may not know that.
Yeah, that, and as we have already noted, SmackDown desperately needs heels after Monday Night Raw. So, yep. if Owens doesn't come over, that could be a real problem.
Yeah, and then as far as Ambrose for the Intercontinental title, I mean, once again, it's now the de facto secondary title on the brand. You could do Ambrose. I'm not sure exactly who you have Ambrose face right now. I am trying to, but there's also any number of guys you could have him, you know, to find the title against.
Ambrose is one of those guys that, again, like, as much as I've liked SmackDown more, Ambrose seems to have kind of gotten lost in a shuffle a little bit.
Yeah, Ambrose needs to, I shouldn't say Ambrose needs to. The writers need to cool it with a comedy for Dean Ambrose. It's crossed the line.
Oh.
I mean, and The Miz came right out and said it. He called him an idiot. I don't know if you remember, if you've ever read Mick Foley's first book about how, you know, your character can be kooky, can be crazy, or whatever, but you cross that line. Like, one night, during an interview segment, The Rock, you know, kind of an ad-lib, called him as Mankind an idiot. It's like, take it back, like, whoa, now. You can't go around calling somebody an idiot, or, you know, my character can't be considered an idiot. You know, there's a line between crazy dangerous and idiot. And if you cross that line, you can't be taken seriously. I hope I explained that well enough.
Yeah, although, yeah, like, I guess I kind of got the point that he was being kind of smart-assy with his commentary about The Miz being John Cena. But I'm not sure that it came off well enough not to construe him as an idiot.
Yeah. I'm not sure if we were supposed to believe that he really believed that Miz was actually John Cena or not. It wasn't played well enough to, if he was just being sarcastic, it went over a number of people's heads.
I just think it could have played better, because I guess I laughed a little bit about it, but.
Yeah, I mean, the line about the Marine 5 was good, of course, once again. Them burying their own movies they spend millions of dollars on, so why do they bother doing it?
I don't have any idea.
Right, but yeah, Ambrose needs to get back. They need to get back to him. He can still do some comedy. He can still be funny. He's got a good sense of humor, but they got to get back to the killer instinct. He's got to feel dangerous, crazy again.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of interesting it was something that ended up happening to Cena, really, where people thought that he got into comedy too much. And it's happening to Ambrose at this point too.
Yeah, so. It's definitely happened, and he needs to rediscover that, you know, what makes someone a lunatic as opposed to a clown.
Agreed. So yeah, hopefully, and maybe I'm just really talking myself into this is better than I thought, better for both sides than I thought it was. Well, I actually thought that SmackDown got the better, but I mean, it could really help freshen up everyone involved. At least more than I, or maybe I just don't have hope for some people. being freshened up that we're on Raw.
Right. I mean, that Raw babyface situation is going to be very, very interesting with Roman Reigns still technically a babyface, Seth Rollins getting a big push, Ambrose now, and Finn Balor. That's a... I mean, if I'm Sami Zayn, I guess I am definitely glad I left that situation, because there's no upper mobility for anyone, you know, beneath that number four spot there. Unless somebody turns heel, which, you know... Maybe you could turn Ambrose. I don't think they're ever going to fully turn Roman. And then if they fully turn Roman, people will just cheer him anyway. It'll be good, you know, like, hey, yay, we won. So I guess if there's going to be a big heel turn coming anytime soon, it'll probably be Ambrose.
Yeah, it's just that he can't turn heel on his good buddy Roman Reigns, because he'll just get cheered. Just like Braun Strowman did.
Oh my goodness, yep. Well, I guess we can talk about that when you're saying that. Well, I guess the SmackDown, the Raw heel side's fairly strong with, you know, obviously when he's around, Brock technically a heel, Strowman, you know, Miz now, Samoa Joe.
Oh. Yeah, I guess that's the one thing. I guess you're talking about them having the four big faces there on Raw and Zayn nowhere to go. At least they have pretty much an equal amount of heels on that side for people to work with.
Yeah, yeah.
And honestly, Finn Balor is still in something. Well,
Bray Wyatt's now in that mix too.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like after they finish with Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton in this House of Horrors match, that's going to be the most ridiculous match ever, and there is pretty much no chance that Bray Wyatt can win this match. Which is just going to make it even... Which can make it even worse. They're going to run with the Bray Wyatt, you know, Finn Balor, demon versus demon type of feud. It certainly looked like.
Yeah, which really... probably isn't the best thing for Balor, just in and of the fact that he's kind of in that same spot as Nakamura, where he's over because of the NXT crowd that does watch, you know, regular WWE programming. But he hasn't gotten much of a personality on Raw itself. So
no, they gave him a video for his match against Jinder Mahal, where Jinder Mahal nearly killed him twice.
Well, and maybe allegedly multiple reports are coming up gave him a concussion.
Well, that would not be good. But man, that forearm was some brutal stuff. Yeah, Finn Balor is definitely glad to never see Jinder Mahal again, I'm sure. Although he did look like he'd been through, after he won the match, he did look like he'd been through a war, which, or kind of a, when he's not in his demon paint, you know, kind of a pretty boy type of guy, you know, those battle scars, you know, they can actually help. You know, that's why they used a blade back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, I know that they gave him a video package, but I still think that he could use kind of a longer feud to help introduce himself instead of getting into the this silliness that is sure to preside over him and Bray Wyatt.
Oh, yeah, Bray Wyatt at this point just kills everything he touches. Maybe they can make this work, especially since Finn's got his own dark side that they can explore, but yeah, I don't have high hopes for anything involving Bray Wyatt at this point. I don't know what to do with Bray Wyatt right now.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe that's one of the problems that I was, at least when I was watching SmackDown, I was thinking to myself, like, Bray Wyatt, I defended him for a long time, but it's just kind of tough at this point, you know? It's been a long time, they've done a lot with the character, they've never really consistently pushed him in any way. So, you know, that's really hurt him a lot. And even, you know, he finally wins the championship, everyone celebrates, and then he loses it at WrestleMania, and like you point out, is gonna lose a match of his own making.
Yeah.
Which is gonna do him zero favors.
You know, he does his mumbo jumbo. He says his mumbo jumbo. He does his parlor tricks, which once again it's a little bit. That's what I'm looking for. Forget it. I get that there's a bit of a hypocrisy there with you know people you know buying into all that kind of smoke and mirror shit with Undertaker, but. He's the Undertaker. He always got away with it. With this Bray Wyatt character, people just kind of roll their eyes at it, and it just
well. And at least with the Undertaker, they kind of. And I know I didn't watch that much at that time period when he really started. Like I almost remember him more as Mean Mark Callis than I do is the early on Undertaker. if I'm being honest, but I still feel like they sold that gimmick way more than they ever sold whatever the Wyatt family was supposed to be.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
They did a good job of introducing them with the.
They almost did too good of a job at introducing them. Like if they didn't show up and actually murder someone and drag them out to the woods. It was a disappointment. That's how effective those early vignettes were with Eric Rowan and his sheep Max holding an axe and Luke Harper just looking creepy as hell.
Yeah, so I mean things started off really well there, but it went downhill from that point. You know, like I said, they never consistently got behind him. What exactly his motivations were was never very clear. And I guess unlike a traditional heel, and you're kind of talking about it tonight with when I was pointing out some problems with the Kevin Owens promo at the top of SmackDown, is that heels always lie. I guess he could never, to me, Bray Wyatt could never talk himself out of a loss as well as Kevin Owens could, or can.
No.
I'm still the eater of worlds, and it's just like, well, that just sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, that's never been a good catchphrase. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. Yeah, it's always, again, it's all this, you know, again, the writers get together. I don't know how involved he is. I think he's pretty involved, but they want to just, you know, they want to create their. I've used a phrase before. I used a phrase years ago. It's I think when I first started doing these shows with you, art house, and that's what they're trying to create.
Yeah.
That's how long that they've been, you know, up and down, up and down, up and down with this Bray Wyatt here.
Yeah, and I do really think it'd help if they committed to it, but they haven't committed to it for, what, 3 years now? You know, he's been, they've been on the main roster for a long time, and, you know, they split them up during the SmackDown Raw splitting to start with. And now Wyatt gets Eric Rowan back, but then the following Monday gets shipped to Raw.
Yeah.
So it's just another one of those, well, why'd you even do that to what's his name? Eric Rowan. Like,
yeah.
Let him kind of, not that I have that high hopes for Eric Rowan or anything, but
I think let him
stand on his own at least. Be a big guy jobber.
They didn't beat him tonight. That's disqualification, but they didn't beat him, so I guess they're going to do a no disqualification match with Orton and Rowan next week. Where then Rowan can eat an RKO again and lose.
Yeah.
But no, I guess it's time to talk about the absolute best part of Monday Night Raw. Oh, Braun Strowman.
Well, oh, yeah.
What a wonderful man. Oh, man. Just everything about it, from Roman Reigns sitting there doing his little, I don't want to say robotic, but not the most exciting promo ever. And then you see his eyes growing like saucers as the freight train is running towards him and there's nothing he can do. And it just doesn't stop. He throws him through a table. You think, okay, maybe that's the end. Power slams him on a rolling crate. You think that could be the end? Runs the rolling crate into Roman Reigns while he's sitting against the wall. Think that could be the end? Nope. Roman is on the stretcher. Oh my god, this image is gonna be. Oh man.
Yeah, Braun, no, then keep going.
Braun then takes the stretcher, throws it, wheels it off the loading dock. It does a complete flip and lands, supposedly with Roman Reigns face first. Then they put Roman in an ambulance. Braun commandeers the ambulance and then tips it over with Roman Reigns inside.
Oh. Yeah. That whole thing was kind of funny. Like, there's just a lot involved in that.
There was. I mean, and you know what? It was so ridiculous over the top, but you know what? It was so, something like that was so needed. Because Braun Strowman, since Fastlane, had found himself on the back burner. Obviously, they want to heat him up for an eventual collision with Brock Lesnar. So he needed to do something to get himself back in the thick of things. And boy, did he ever.
Well, yeah, and I guess that's still the interesting thing about the whole situation. Someone's got to take that loss.
Which is why I could see them making it either a stretcher match or an ambulance match. Roman Reigns doesn't have to get pinned in either of those scenarios.
But he still gets beat senseless.
Yeah, he still got to take a beating, but again, it's how their logic works. No one ever saw him take the 1-2-3 or tap out. You can gimmick it enough so that it doesn't feel like he still took a beating. Again,
yeah.
I don't think Braun Strowman will be the one to beat Brock Lesnar, but then he might. I don't know. Once again, what Brock Lesnar's schedule going forward is going to be, or when they're even getting around to the match. But yeah. I mean, they did a. Once again, they did a big angle. It's definitely. Although it's almost silly how they had to downplay the injuries of Roman Reigns could possibly sustain from enduring all of that, just because he's not going to be out of action for more than 3 weeks.
Oh, Yeah, that was killing me just in regards to something else on Raw there. But yeah, the fact that Roman Reigns will likely be back on our televisions before Stephanie McMahon is. And the severity of their injuries just from what we witnessed on TVs are vastly different and fully in the favor of Roman Reigns being out of action for a far longer time period. Than
Roman Reigns should be dead. He just killed him. He just killed him. He just killed that guy. Wow. But yeah. No, once again, we've seen it before. It's silly. It's one of those things you got. You know, just roll. You just gotta chuckle at. You know.
Oh yeah, I don't expect a real answer to that question because I've been watching professional wrestling for entirely too long.
Right. And it once again, it definitely. Look, by the time we get to Payback, the most anticipated match on the show is not going to be Randy Orton versus Bray Wyatt in the Whorehouse match. You didn't even catch what I just did there, did you?
The Whorehouse match? I gotcha.
It's going to be Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt. I mean, Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman is going to feel like, it already does feel like it's going to be a pretty big deal. And it's a feud that's been going on for quite a while now, so that's a testament to what they did there.
Yeah, and I guess it will be interesting. It is kind of funny. I think we've mentioned it before that Braun Strowman goes from the guy not selling the Brock Lesnar clotheslines to being his most interesting matchup.
Yeah, I mean, the job they've done with Braun Strowman, maybe the 4 weeks in between Fastlane and WrestleMania notwithstanding, although he did have the cool moment where he ran over Roman Reigns in Detroit.
Yes.
But, they've done an incredible job with Braun Strowman, and they should be heavily applauded. Now, Strowman himself gets better every week. His match with Roman Reigns at Fastlane was very, very good. I'm sure their match coming up at Payback will also be very good to great. And then, depending on the kind of mood Brock's in that day, I guess maybe his match with Brock Lesnar could be really good too.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that is going to be in the mold of Brock Lesnar Goldberg. That it is not going to be a long match, and it's just going to be hard hitting. And it will be enjoyable quite a bit.
I'm already excited. I'm already excited for it. I hope it gets here soon. I can't wait to SummerSlam for that one. And I don't think they can either. So I assume Brock can be working one of these, B quote unquote B shows shortly. I don't think they can drag out the wait and until SummerSlam.
Oh, for those two to match up. Because I guess that's the other thing to me that's kind of interesting. Like, I guess as much as the WWE is going to get behind Braun Strowman, I would be fairly surprised if they threw the belt on him.
I'd be surprised. I mean,
especially for an extended period of time.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a surprise, but I wouldn't completely. I mean, I guess I'd bet against it, but not a lot, and it's still possible, but no, I don't think they'll have Brock lose in his first defense, but then again, his schedule is whatever his schedule is, and whatever they want from him, that's, we don't know that, but in the end, though, I mean, again, we're gonna get a hell of a match, right? It's just a hell of a spectacle.
Oh. Well, were there any other moves, I guess, that we didn't really talk about?
Well, I guess we could talk about the biggest move of all, the biggest switch. Byron Saxton and David Otunga switching shows.
I didn't realize this. Evidently, this news did break sometime after Raw last night.
Yeah, there was a video on WWE.com and YouTube of apparently Byron Saxton being told that he was going to SmackDown, and he looked genuinely surprised.
Well, one Vincent Kennedy McMahon has been known to like to surprise people in these situations.
Yes, he has, and Byron Saxton found himself on SmackDown, back with JBL, who used to torment him and call him an idiot every 5 minutes, but suspiciously tonight, JBL was on his very best behavior. I wonder why.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. So I think I saw it on Twitter there, if they wondered if, what's it, James Ellsworth would get called a turtle without a shell or something, whatever.
Yeah, JBL was pretty neutered tonight.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting, like, when I actually noticed more of, what's-his-name's gimmick, Byron Saxton's lines.
Yeah, there were times where, you know, if this was back on Raw a year ago, oh, would have JBL have pounced on some of those lines from Byron Saxton? Oh, and it would have been brutal. But nope, not tonight.
Well, and I guess it was kind of interesting. When I was watching Raw, Corey Graves does his own job of giving Byron Saxton hell.
Yeah, he does. I mean, but it does come off more like ribbing on a square, and just two guys are actually buddies. You know.
And
it's kind of disappointing because, you know, I actually did feel like what.
Well, no, that's kind of an important point, I guess, is that I you can tell that there's more of a playfulness to it.
Yeah, I mean, I was feeling like, I mean, Byron's not great, but he's got a good personality. He's, you know, he looks good out there. He tries. I get the whereas opposed to David Otunga, who I feel like does not try. We go what 5 minute stretches where he doesn't say a word sometimes.
Yeah, you could swear he isn't on the broadcast from time to time.
Yeah, yeah. So, but no, as I said, I was starting to like the Raw team, but no, the switch was made, and I guess yeah. We should close off by talking about it. Why this three-man team is in place right now, and why Tom Phillips has been the lead announcer on SmackDown, including during WrestleMania for the last 4 weeks.
And I guess you're going to need to help fill me in a little bit, because there hasn't really been much of a written report about this. And, I will admit that, and I've admitted in the past, I do not go online all that much over the weekend. So, I saw that there was a story about JBL and Morrow, and the level of shock and surprise on my face was non-existent.
Yeah,
when I was told the basics of the story.
Right, yeah. And the basic of the story is... Now, once again, I think a lot, you know, there's a lot more to come out, and yeah, it's, you know, a lot is probably is Moro's, you know, story to tell eventually, unless they settle and he signs a non-disclosure agreement. But just the fact that I have to use those words to tell you that things got really, really bad. there's definitely a culture, you know, we've it's been said before, you know, Vince McMahon likes to, you know, enjoys nitpicking at his announcers, yelling at them, you know, forcing them to use verbiage they would never normally use, and, you know, being, you know, big on certain words. More than one person who could afford to walk away has certainly walked away from a WWE commentary job. Mick Foley, Taz, you know,
Mike Adamly.
What?
Mike Adamly.
Yeah, I mean, that was necessarily happening, but, you know, once again, you know, the way Vince treats his announcers, it has absolutely had a detrimental effect on the product. We see it every week.
Hey, oh.
And then you've got JBL there, who is essentially Vince's voice. If Vince wants somebody buried, he will say something into JBL's ear, and they will get buried. And maybe I didn't necessarily notice it, but maybe if you can go back, you could probably see there were times where it felt like JBL and Moro were not ripping each other's hair. They were not buddies. And it really came to a head when Moro Ronaldo was voted as the announcer of the year in the Wrestling Observer Awards. And Moro drew attention to it on Twitter. And thanked the fans for voting for him, and which led to JBL on Twitter and on a WWE Network show, the Bring It to the Table, just absolutely eviscerating Moro over it, calling him a mark for himself, and, you know, who cares about what some geeks on the internet think, and blah, 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 blah. You know, it is a, which of course it's also, you know, for the last 2 or 3 years of the same Wrestling Observer Awards, JBL has finished either first or second or worst announcer. So that might also play things part into things as well. Yeah. If we've obviously seen the man is thin-skinned, I mean, that shouldn't come as any surprise. Now, once again, as far as the actual, you know, any accusations of bullying, that is where I'm still vague myself.
Oh.
Now, it's absolutely, Moro has bipolar disorder. And anxiety, depression, the whole nine yards. The whole, you know, mental health, you know, trifecta or maybe grand slam.
Right.
Things did get to him to the point where he checked himself into a hospital and, you know, to get himself well. Now, if it wasn't just, you know, JBL going on a Twitter rant, the you know, needling on commentary and the rant on the network show, or was, you know, the old tricks of, you know, fucking with, again, the bullying / hazing / ribbing culture of the WWE locker room, did that rear its ugly head here? Did, you know, were there, was his luggage fucked with? Did JBL leave him at a gas station in the middle of nowhere and took his phone and made him have to hitchhike his way to the next town? You know, the cruel things that can happen in a locker room setting. Yeah, and JBL, of course, has numerous people have come, you know, on and off record, you know, how horrible that, you know, him and his crew were to deal with. Back in the day,
right.
A lot of stories from the mid-2000s SmackDown locker room with JBL and someone who's certainly proven to be a sadist, Chris Benoit, you know, really leading the pack of just this just horrible behavior. I mean, it goes beyond, you know, really goes beyond any kind of initiation or hazing or anything. I mean, we're talking about years-long campaigns to just fuck with people. And that's not right.
Hey.
That's not right at all. And for it to, you know, because one of the big things that's come out of all this is, you know, Justin Roberts' book about all the things that he had to endure, especially at the hands of JBL.
Yeah, well, now, did he have something, Justin Roberts, did he have something other than the, which is still, it's one of those situations where it's just like, there's a rib and then there's stealing someone's passport.
Yeah, that story has come, you know, JBL even tried to deny that story using the keywords, I didn't steal his passport. Turns out he tried to get, at the time, John Morrison / Johnny Mundo / Johnny Nitro and Joey Mercury to do it for him. They ended up refusing, and themselves, or at least Morrison himself, you know, kind of having to deal with, put up with JBL shit until one day he decided, years later, to finally push him against the wall and say, you want to go right now, and guess who? Back down. But yeah, I mean, stuff like that, I mean, whatever initiation or hazing is acceptable in a athlete's locker room setting, that's up for debate. But non-athlete personnel should certainly be off limits.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's... It seems silly, especially for someone... even if both of us would not have voted for Mauro as announcer of the year, the guy has done enough sporting events that there's no reason he shouldn't have just been given a free pass.
Yeah, I mean, if you got problems with, you know, if you think he's, you know, bragging on, you know, he's still been in the company for all this little over a year, and he's acting like he's the best announcer in the world, and you don't think he is, or you don't think he should be saying that out loud, have a conversation with him, you know, in private. You know, if you don't like, if you think Mamma Mia is stupid, just kind of tell him to cut it out like he did with Joey Styles, and oh my God. You don't have to humiliate the guy, and really, these situations should never, you know, move over to on-cam. They should never. Now, once again, we don't know. Once again, where it's all vague is, was it just the stuff we saw, the public stuff that led to, the, you know, Mauro's, you know, breakdown? Or was there, once again, as I said, was there the old tricks, the old, was JBL involved? Was Vince screwing with the guy? Were they, you know, knowing his condition, did they purposely try to break him? These are all questions.
Yeah.
And it sucks that these even have to be questions. You know, you just want to watch the stuff and enjoy it and not think about how horrible of human beings the people backstage are, but then every few years it seems like something happens and it just makes you feel dirty. And this is a moving story. There could be, depending on the amount of people who want to go on record and talk to Meltzer or talk to, you know, even, you know, mainstream outlets.
Right.
This could get big. But they obviously tonight, they had no fear of keeping JBL around. They obviously neutered him for at least one night.
Yeah. Yeah, he was definitely more tame tonight than he has been in recent memory, especially when you have that sitting duck Byron Saxton at your side to make fun of.
Right. Yeah. So this is all going to be. I mean, Mauro Ranallo is certainly, he's done. He's going to be doing some boxing on Showtime, I believe, this weekend. What his WWE contract always allowed him to do on weekends when he didn't have a pay-per-view to call, that he could do, you know, whatever else he wanted to do. Probably, you know, except for other wrestling and maybe UFC was considered, you know, not something he could do.
Right.
But yeah, and he does have a podcast that he has been that's been off for a while with him and Bas Rutten. And Bas Rutten's another part of this whole thing because he has basically threatened that if he ever sees JBL anywhere, he's going to beat the crap out of him.
Oh, well, I had noticed just because I follow Bas Rutten on Twitter that Rutten and Rinaldo had been on hiatus for this whole time period. I was not aware of the fact that he may want to take off JBL's head, which he is eminently capable of doing.
Oh, yes, definitely is. But no, I mean, I don't know how much, while he's still under contract, Morrow can say or should say or will say if and when the podcast returns or if he's going to make any public statements, if he plans on filing any kind of suit, or if WWE's going to make this go away. But you can't make everything go away. It all depends on who wants to go on record. Let's talk about things that have happened, and supposedly it's not a thing of the past. And it seems like it's more in the office, in the production setting, that these things happen than the current day locker room. I mean, when the old guard moved out and the quote-unquote video game kids moved in, you don't really have a locker room of people who fucking with each other for sport anymore. No. But the culture in the office and the production does appear to still... this will be the same as it always is, because that's where the world's oldest teenager still rules.
Well, and I just think that not just with Vince heading things up, but just a lot of people that are in those positions are older.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The old guard is still there in that regard. Yeah.
So I think that's another thing that's probably why it's more... within that sector than in the locker room, because as much as I keep on going, oh my god, these guys are older than I think, to pretty much all the talent coming up. Like, I still hadn't really dawned on me that Dash and Dawson were 29 and 30, respectively, I believe. I was like, oh, well, fuck, they took their time getting here. Not to say I don't enjoy them immensely, but you're bursting onto the scene when most people have had a job for half a dozen years,
right?
I just think that the age group that's there still has something of that mentality, and I'm not surprised that it hasn't changed that much. Like you said, with Vince in charge, it's not fully going to change. Like, they can kind of drag it into the new era to a certain point, but there's only so much they can do until he isn't, part of the decision-making anymore.
Right.
Which, doesn't seem to be anytime soon.
No. I'm sure he plans to live forever.
Yeah. Well, he can just unfortunately look at poor Jay Giles, who was also 71, and his gone on to be God's latest... music maker that he's recalled to another place. But I don't know. Is there anything else? I think that about wraps things up.
I think we've wrapped this thing up with a pretty bow.
Well,
you've had everything that's happened this week.
This beverage of choice tonight, I still... of all the beers left over at the wedding, I still have a bunch of black IPAs. And considering that is also the style of beer that is currently still slowly bubbling away downstairs, I figured I should get this out of my fridge. This is the Black Belt IPA, which also was a clone beer for Deschutes Black IPA. And I do not feel right copying someone's recipe as my own, though this is delicious. Something new needed to come about. That was the other reason why I was kind of excited to use rye in that, because that definitely threw that equation way off as far as flavor profile goes. So, yeah, Black Belt IPA, it's limited choice, but next one, not so limited. So, I'm at DeFrango11, he's at Chris Calamita, the brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes and SoundCloud and wherever else you may get this fine podcast. Have a good night.
Later.